we get things underway this afternoon by welcoming to the show and right here in the studio, the new artistic director at Penobscot Theater Company, Jonathan Berry, joining us in studio. Jonathan, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. It's really great to be here. Thanks.
Well, it's wonderful to meet you. Let's ask the big question first. Why Penobscot Theater? What drew you here from Chicago?
I had been in Chicago for about 25 years. Spent my entire career there after undergrad. And I was looking for a really terrific organization that had an appetite for the kind of plays that I love. And I was really looking to be in conversation with the community. Chicago is fantastic, but Chicago is also can sometimes, when you're producing theater there, feel a little bit like you're preaching to the choir. So I was excited to have an opportunity of getting some different perspective and different kind of responses. I really truly believe that theater should be a reflection of its community, mm-hmm. and sometimes a place that kind of challenges the community a little bit. And so all of that was certainly. I've been learning how to pronounce Bangor and hitting that G, but all of that was very present in Bangor. And then, frankly, the staff, I call them the small but mighty staff at PTC, was really remarkable, and for me, reminded me a lot of some great theaters that I worked with in Chicago, of people who are truly dedicated to the art and excited by it and sort of all hands on deck with the creation of it. And I did. I walked into that great 100-year-old building, and it felt immediately like home. And I said, oh, this feels like a good place for me.
Well, that's wonderful. We're so excited to have you here. Now, every job has its challenges as well, as you learn more about the company and the history and the path forward. What do you see as a couple of challenges that you look forward to embracing?
I don't know if everyone else has done the tally, but we produce 12 productions a year, and for a theater company, that means that we are constantly coming up with the next thing and the next thing, and that is something that I love, and that is something that I'm excited by, and also I am just watching this remarkable staff, I don't mean to say crank out the art, but that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Every month, something new is coming down the pipeline. So I am excited by that, but also recognizing, hey, that schedule is pretty challenging and for everyone involved. So I'm trying to figure out the way to keep that great amount of work that's coming in, so that we can stay in that kind of constant communication. But also make sure that, every once in a while, maybe a staff member can go on vacation and step out of here for a second.
We were talking about this before we came on the air. It's been a challenging couple of years for everybody, but the arts especially has had some unique challenges. And there were those people who questioned, I think, during the pandemic, if live theater would ever return to what it used to be. I'm sure the same thing for live music productions, but just getting back in there and seeing live theater reminds us that the power of being there in the audience or being on stage and looking at that audience is something you can't replace in any kind of online way.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. And I felt really blessed in Chicago to be sort of in two different scenes. I was working for 5 years as an artistic producer at Steppenwolf, so I got to sort of work on theater at that kind of level. But my sort of real home, I'm a company member at both Steep Theater and Griffin Theater, which are storefronts, which is something that Chicago really leans hard on, finding, maybe 50, maybe 70 seat spaces that you can remove a drop ceiling and screw in some lights, but have a very sort of intimate experience. And I missed so much being in those rooms. So that is one of the things, that we are certainly leaning on this year, right, is to say, hey, live theater is back. We are making it as safe as possible. Certainly, while masking is no longer required, people are still masking in the space to keep actors safe, and we're testing all the time, but we're doing everything we can to make sure that you can still come into that space and have that, irreplaceable feeling of watching relationships on stage and connecting to them and feeling that shared space with your, not just between the actors, right? But between fellow audience members. There's something that is electric about all those people. And 9 to 5 was up when I arrived here. So I got to sort of be around for the last 3 weeks of that. And truly to see nearly full houses, experiencing the joy of Dolly Parton and that sort of wonderful, hilarious, and pointed satire to have them, you know, dancing and clapping at the end. It really just reminded me, oh, yeah, this is why we do this. There is nothing like this experience. And I had a mentor who said, I think she meant it not as maybe the compliment that I'm taking it as. But she looked at me and she said, God, you really are a true believer, aren't you? I'm like, I am. Give me more of it all the time.
We're talking with Jonathan Barry from Penobscot Theater here on Downtown. So what about you personally, John? Obviously, you do the shows that you schedule for the season with an eye on, obviously, as you mentioned, challenging the audience. But, you know, you also need to pay the bills along the way as well. But personally, what's the kind of theater that you enjoy most either watching or being a part of?
I am laughing because certainly if you look at my resume, there's a lot of British work on there. There's a lot of new plays. I am personally less attracted to some of the really old classic standards, I have a couple of Shakespeare's on my resume, but that's not the thing that I generally get as excited about. And I think that that's because a couple of different reasons. I am really excited by the way that theater can connect to our current moment. And some of the playwrights who are writing right now, I think, are writing about some issues and some ideas that I really want to explore. So I think I'm drawn to that. And the British plays, I've done a little bit of, you know, thinking about it, right, about what's British playwrights tend to be really, really invested in the class conversation about sort of what it is to be sort of born into a certain level. And I think that is just the Brits in general. They have a little bit more sort of like attunement to that. But I'm really excited about those conversations. I grew up outside of Detroit, and those sort of blue-collar conversations are ones that my resume is pretty well filled with.
Is there, and should there be, a responsibility on the part of arts organizations to talk about some of the issues we're dealing with as a larger society?
I truly believe that. I'm going to steal a little bit from Oscar Eustace right now, who talks about a great sort of connection between the birth of theater and the birth of democracy. I think that for sure, right, there's a reason why those two things rose up at the same time. But, right, with that, I also recognize and embrace the ability that theater has to truly provide like joy and uplift. So I think my job as an artistic director is to look at a season and say, what's the balance? What are the great conversations that we want to be having right now? What are the things that we want to explore and ask questions about? But also, in the middle of February, wherever you are, but I'm coming from Chicago, and certainly I've heard tell of the Maine winters, right? it is not a bad thing to sit in the dark with a room full of people and just have a little bit of a laugh. So I'm tuned into all of that, and I've got a great executive director in Jen Shepherd who will absolutely say, we get just a spoonful more sugar into the season, not to quote the Mary Poppins that's coming up next summer. But I think that's part of the job.
There's a very important event coming up next week, too. We want to let people know about it. It's called Stage of the Union. And it's, first of all, a chance for people to meet you, but also to learn about plans for the theater going forward and share their thoughts.
Right. When Jen and I talked about what a season launch could be, I think the twofold purpose of the event for me was to first just to Jen also came into this in the middle of the pandemic, so she hasn't had an official coming out party either, but an opportunity for both of us to sort of introduce and reintroduce ourselves to our patrons and to the community, to talk a little bit about our vision for the theater's future, to share why we're so excited about the plays on the 49th season, but also then to open up the conversation to have patrons ask questions, to have people, to actually kind of be in a one-to-one communication with us, and then to have a little party as well. We're going to open up the concession stands and have some free drinks, and we would love to really sort of celebrate and share with the community and its relationship with this great theater company that is going to be celebrating its 50th season, not this coming, but the next.
Right. And that's next week, Wednesday night, August 10th. And people can go to the website, penobscottheater.org, for more information. Give a call to the theater at 942-3333, or just stop on by and see what's going on. Let's talk a little bit about the season itself. Jonathan Berry from Penobscot Theater with us. And a very interesting play to open the year. Tell us a little bit about Clarkston.
Yeah, Samuel D. Hunter's Clarkston is a play that's been on my radar for a good long while. He is originally from Idaho, and he sets all of his plays there. And, it was intriguing to me because he is writing about two young men who work at a big box store. And one who has just arrived in town, and one who has been there for a bit, and he was specifically writing about two towns that were named after Lewis and Clark. So Clarkston, obviously, was named after Clark. The sister play, Lewiston, which is sometimes performed together but can be performed separately, is obviously named after Lewis. But he's exploring that idea of what happens when human beings have this desire for exploration, this sort of potential to explore, but then are met with circumstances that perhaps don't allow them to actually sort of fully explore this broad reach of that potential. So that makes it seem very dark. It's an incredibly funny play. I think that Sam, as a playwright, is really, really tuned into the human experience, and I think that he finds a lot of joy and a lot of humor in relationships that sometimes struggle to find exactly an in-sync step. And for me, there's something that's incredibly beautiful about the ending of the play, where you find these two young men who, things weren't going super well for them, but maybe they're taking a step forward. And I think he gives us a really lovely dollop of hope at the end that, that for me, speaks to this moment as well. Speaks to, I think we've all had, most of us anyway, a rough couple of years. And the recognition of this too shall pass is, I think, really present in the play.
And also after that, a play about a couple of people that everybody knows something about when it comes to celebrity, perhaps no one bigger than Matt and Ben, but also a playwright that people are well acquainted with in a different role.
Right. Mindy Kaling and her writing partner Brenda Withers both wrote and starred in this original production. Mindy Kaling from The Office, and she's obviously exploded since then. But her... they have written a remarkable satire, and a satire that really focuses on. We start in the terrible downtown Boston apartment of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck after they have recently graduated from college, and they are hard at work on an adaptation of Catcher in the Rye. All this was, I guess, true, which is fascinating. And here's where things become slightly less true. From the ceiling drops the completed script of Good Will Hunting with their names on it. And then we watch these two college guys with a lot of desire try to figure out what to do with this script that literally just fell from the sky. It's a very sort of pointed satire, and the beautiful thing that Mindy and Brenda did then was insisted the casting of Matt and Ben, and it really is just a two-hander, it's just two actors, be played by female-identifying actors. So you see these two women who are pretending to be Matt Damon and Ben Affleck wrestling with the script that is going to write their ticket for the rest of their lives. And it's, yeah, it turns out Mindy Kaling has something to say about that.
Well, can't wait to see that. It's a wonderful season. You can get more details by going to the website, penobscottheater.org, or better yet, make plans to be there at the theater next Wednesday night for Stage of the Union and hear all about plans for the future, season 49, season 50, and beyond. Jonathan, well, welcome to town, but welcome to the show. We look forward to visiting with you on a regular basis.
I look forward to being here. And Jen would be really upset if I didn't mention that those tickets to Stage of the Union are free tickets. So, you know, we really are inviting you to just come and check us out. Thanks so much for having me.
You better believe it. And while you're on the subject, too, get a subscription for the year as well. That would be a great idea.